welcome to today's episode of Nucleus Investment Insights. In today's episode, we're going to do a deep dive into the world of ethical investing. On the agenda, we'll define what ethical investing is. We'll explore the effect of ethical investing on portfolio performance. Next, we'll look at what options are out there in the market, and then we'll delve into the many pitfalls. Today, as always, I want to welcome Damien Klassen, who's Nucleus Wealth's co-founder and chief investment officer. Damo, welcome.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, Damo. My name's Sam Kerr, and I'm the senior financial advisor at Nucleus Wealth. For those of you that don't know, Nucleus Wealth is an Australian active and passive investment manager. We're a global macro investment house and use the insights shared on this podcast to construct and manage our active portfolios. We're also the first to offer passive direct indexing in Australia, which has been labeled ETFs 2.0 as you can customize your chosen index. On the point of customization, we offer around 50 different ethical sector and asset class screens, so you can personalize your portfolio so it aligns to your ethical values, beliefs, and specific market views. Just a quick housekeeping reminder, if you enjoy our content, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the bell below to be notified when we go live or have a new episode recorded. We are usually live every Thursday at 12:30 Sydney, Melbourne time, but today's a pre-record as the team is off enjoying the Christmas break, so we won't be able to answer any of your questions live today. However, for future episodes, jump in and ask any questions that come to mind, and we'll do our best to answer them during the show. You can also follow us on your preferred podcast platform, as our show is available on all the majors. And if you'd like to look at the slides in more detail, we'll post them in the show notes this afternoon, and you can view these at nucleuswealth.com/webinars. So now we've got the housekeeping out of the way. Damo, over to you to get us started.
Yeah, sure. So the main thing I want to try and run through today is just sort of giving you a broad overview of ethical investing. ASIC's been on the warpath recently, cracking down on a bunch of people who are doing the wrong thing in this space. It's been the flavor of the minute. And so, you know, whenever an investment theory is flavor of the minute, it obviously attracts a lot of the less scrupulous operators as well as the more scrupulous ones. So I guess what I want to do is talk about that, talk about what it actually means for your portfolio, like how far are you actually going to underperform? And then what are the different options out there? How can you invest and what are the pitfalls you should be looking for? So I'll try to keep it relatively quick as I run through, because there's lots of different terminology and things like that. So I'll try to hit you up with a few of those to start with. So first I want to start with this idea of sustainable investing. Socially responsible investing and ethical investing that a lot of some people look at it on this sort of spectrum of sort of light green to dark green in terms of the sustainable is sort of things that sort of lead in the right direction, and then socially responsible sort of gets you one step further, and then you start sort of knocking more and more things out. That's sort of one spectrum. We've got a few other spectrums we're gonna talk about. But I did want to talk about this ASIC sort of crackdown that's been going on, in particular in terms of greenwashing. And so what's been happening is what they're calling this is where companies basically come out with products that look like they're ethically focused, but when you actually dig into it, you find that it's actually just the same product slapped with a different label on it or you know, some very slight changes. And so, ASIC sort of come out and banned a few and given a few fines and starting to, and it's been quite clear as to what it's looking for and what's trying to get out of this in terms of actually, you know, what you say is what you actually need to deliver on those. So, you know, I guess though it's an important reminder that there are a lot out there who are doing, This is an area rife where if you slap a green logo on it, it seems like, therefore it must be good. You can't possibly be unethical and trying to sell ethical products. Whereas I do think there are a number of companies out there that are doing that, and a number that I would consider charging unethical fees as well, while purporting to be to selling ethical products.
Damo, these are really. Companies that are trying to ride that wave of ethical investing, doing good for the environment, and putting that green banner on them, but maybe they're not actually doing it. They're just trying to capture funds or you know, be perceived to be doing the right thing when in reality they're not. Is that the idea?
Yep. It's all marketing, no substance behind it. And it is worth noting as well, even once you start looking at companies themselves, so you might look at a company which is a, say a BP or one of the big oil guys, and they've got these masses of documents they'll give you about all these different things they're doing and all these positive effects and support for local communities and, like a tidal wave of information about how they're helping society. But in the end, they're still doing that, they're still producing that oil. And a lot of these, you go to their website and you wouldn't even know that you're looking at an oil producer. They're like, there's all these pristine pictures of, beaches and penguins and, all these other things. And you're like, what does this company actually do? And then windmills, because they've got a few, 0.01% of their business is producing green power. And so the greenwashing, the ASIC crackdowns on investment once, but that also happens at the company level as well, in that you find, big companies will often pass some of these, some of the tests that the ESG providers, information providers give, they pass with flying colors, and some of the smaller companies don't. Not because the smaller companies are doing worse things than the bigger companies. It's just the bigger companies have a department who know how to spin and look things and get get the boxes ticked. And so if they need to have, whatever it is to get a box ticked, they will get that box ticked. And whereas the smaller one doesn't even know that they need to tick the box. They're too busy actually running their business to speak to these, the social ones. So, I guess it's both at a company level and at an investment level, there's greenwashing going on.
Yeah, so it sounds like a marketing spin that often may not be ethical, shall we say.
Yes. Now the other the next definition I wanted to run through was what is usually called ESG, so environmental, social, and governance. Now, there's three sort of elements to that, and they are difficult to, some of them more difficult than others to actually quantify what it actually is. So environmental is a bit easier in that that's looking at a company's energy use, what it's wasting, pollution, natural resource conservation, things like that. Then you get the social ones, where it's more about, look, what's the company like as a social player? Is it dodging its taxes? Is it actually, is it screwing its suppliers, or is it giving it fair wages and all these types of factors like that? And then finally, the governance, what's the leadership like? Are they benefiting management at the expense of shareholders? Or is it, is executive pay way above what you'd expect to see in other companies? So those three together often sort of act as what a lot of different firms will look at as their measurements.
Yeah, and I think Damo, just with the ESG, it's been an attempt to, standardize a lot of the different aspects out there, because there's so much to look at in a company. These are just sort of a way to categorize and compare one company to the next in a sense.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll go into a few of how you consider the positive, negative. That's probably fits for this next one is how do people invest in them? You're either doing a positive, a best of breed, or a negative, typically in terms of investment, in terms of ethical investing. And so what I'm talking about there is I'm saying a positive ethical investment is basically saying, where are they trying to look for companies that are going to make a difference? So we're going to find the ones that are producing, that are running with electric windmills or producing renewable power and all these other factors, things that they think are going to, some sort of carbon improved way of producing cement or things like that, where it's like, okay, I'm actually looking for the guys that are going to help.
And that's also called impact investing, another term for that. So you're actually making an impact. You're actually doing some good rather than just excluding companies.
Yeah. Now that sounds good. The problem with it is...
Sounds like there's a but.
Yeah, there's a very big but for this one. The problem with it is that how much are you going to pay for these companies? So... Yeah, I found this company that's fantastic. It's doing all these great things for society, and it's paying all the shareholders, paying all its employees in great wages, and donating all to the local communities and all that type of stuff. but it might be priced on this horrendous multiple where it's really expensive. And yes, maybe they're going to save the world, but do I want to actually lose money on my investment? And it's this idea behind it is saying, well, if I'm out there buying at a company that's just really expensive because it's doing all these great things for the environment, what have I actually really done? So I've just taken, you know, whatever, $100,000 of my hard-earned cash, and I've dumped it all into this company that's fantastic and it's doing all these great things. That company hasn't seen 1 cent of my money. That's all gone to another shareholder who's traded out of the company and gone and bought something else with it. And so it's a question about whether, you know, it's hard enough finding companies that are cheap and reasonable quality and appropriately priced and all these things like that and got reasonable growth. To then say, oh, and they also have to save the world, sort of then it ends up making it more difficult. So I'm not saying that, you know, investors will avoid these companies. It's just a question about how overpriced do you want to pay for those companies. So I'll move a little bit more into that in a minute. The next one is this best of breed idea. And so the best of breed basically says, look, let's benchmark companies all against each other. And we'll go, let's take the, we don't want to have no exposure to certain sectors. So let's just take the companies that are doing the most. So for example, you might go in the carbon sector, you might end up owning Woodside. And so you invest in this fund that you think's sort of, you know, carbon, it's looking for a reduced carbon investment impact. And you're looking at it, you go, I've got Woodside. Like these guys are one of the biggest oil and gas companies in Australia and you know, one of the biggest globally. And then you go, well, yes, but they're mainly producing gas. And the gas is way better as a transition fuel than coal. And so therefore we've picked them. And so it's a question for a lot of people about saying, well, is this a little bit disingenuous? And if you're saying, look, I'm trying to get carbon out of my portfolio, should I just get carbon out of my portfolio rather than saying, well, I'll still invest in some of them as long as they're better than the worst, as long as they're not the worst ones, I'll accept that. And so, so that sort of faces two aspects. One is you've got that same issue about performance. It's about saying, well, I'm still buying oil and gas, but I'm not picking it based on whether I think this stock's going to outperform other ones and whether it's got good assets. I'm just buying it because I think that they've done a better job presenting, you know, what their effect is going to be on society. And so there's that same issue there. And then the second one is, it is a little bit, you know, if you're genuinely investing, saying, well, I don't want to make money from polluting the planet and I want to try and shift into renewable energies, then investing in a company that is still involved in the carbon part of the market is probably not what you're actually looking for.
Yeah, and Damon, I think you know, often people get sucked in. Yes, I want to be an ethical investor, and they may invest in an ethical fund, and then realize that the fund does have these best of breed type companies in there, because often the funds, you know, if you exclude lots and lots of these different sectors that are maybe perceived as bad, you know, there can be underperformance. So maybe they put in best of breed, but then that's sort of at odds with what the intention of the fund. And I guess it's sort of on some level a bit of greenwashing.
Yeah,
they're still going to include a Woodside.
Yeah. And then finally, you have the negative ethical screening. So this one basically excludes companies from the portfolio that don't have that. They're in that sector you don't want, or governance issues, or whatever the other factors are that actually excludes them. Now that's our preference is going down that line. Having said that, though, you can run into the issue, as you said, with a lot of other funds where it's a little bit all in or all out, and so that's where. You might go, yeah, okay, I want an ethical fund, but I need to find one that's, you know, well, I might be investing in an ethical fund because I don't want to have anything to do with tobacco, and I don't want to have anything to do with say nuclear power and anything to do with carbon. And so that's great. I've got those ones, but all of a sudden I'm like, well, now I'm not doing anything with animal testing, and I'm missing out on some companies there that I might have felt ambivalent about. Maybe there's no gaming companies in there, and I might think, well, gaming's fine for me. Where there might be alcohol companies missing, and I'm sort of saying, well, you know, I'm happy to buy alcohol companies if that's, you know, if that was one of my ethical screens. And so sometimes you can end up with, you know, too much pushed out of your portfolio and sort of end up with these unweighted portfolios. And that's where we sort of look to bring that back so that people can individualize it. But we'll move on to that, you know, at a later state. But I guess the main thing I wanted to point out, though, is that there's three different ways. You're positive, you're best of breed, and you're negative. And almost all funds fall into one of those categories or a mix of those categories in terms of how they treat things. So that leads back to the real question I think everyone should be asking before, you know, as you're coming into this: why do you actually want to invest ethically? And should you be doing it at all? And this is where, you know, so and this is coming from, like, we're one of the bigger ethical providers in the market. So we've certainly obviously got a vested interest. But I do, in terms of getting people to make at least some decisions about ethical investing and slice some things out of the portfolio. But I do want to say that you really do need to think about why you're doing it, because there are lots of better ways to do it often. I spoke about that example of saying buying shares on the market, and I've got a few up on screen just showing from more impact to less impact. And so, yeah, a bigger impact is making a donation. So, you know, if you've got money and you're not particularly interested in the outcome, you just want to get of your actual investment. So say you're interested in helping whatever it is, some sort of let's say you're looking to cure a particular type of disease, and you can choose to go and invest in a biotech stock that's got this interesting technology in that space. And these ones always look really good. You know, there's always lots of pictures of, yes, young kids with these diseases who they're helping to solve and all those types of things. If you actually just took your money and went out and donated to that cause, that's going to help your cause more than you buying a share from another investor. Like, that's actually going to make a genuine, you know, the cause gets your money and off they go. Companies themselves tend not to be tax deductible, but, you know, chances are that if it's an ethical thing, there'll be some sort of industry body or something like that out there where you can make a tax deductible donation to it. And so you can actually genuinely help that. The next thing is actually buying the product yourself. So, you know, if you're talking, let's say it's solar panels or something like that, is you're becoming an investor in a solar panel manufacturer. Sure, that might help them in a very small way in terms of increasing their price or whatever. But actually, what they'd really prefer you to do is actually get out and buy their product. Most companies want more clients or customers than more investors. And the companies that are interested in more investors than customers, you know, they're the ones you really have to be worried about, because they're the ones that are running something where you're like, why do you need to keep on getting investors, you know, into to help support? The third way then is actually buying shares from the company in a capital raising. So your biotech company is saying, okay, we've reached whatever level we want to get through the next hurdle that the regulatory authorities are giving us. We need to raise another $20 million to get past that and do all the extra research and have the clinical studies. Okay, if you give that company money in a capital raising, that is genuinely helping that company to achieve its goal. If you wait until the capital raising's after and then go and buy shares from another investor, you're both. That last one, that buy shares on the market. So I guess what we try and do within our portfolio is to say, well, go through the sectors and work out what you're trying to do here. So if it's something where you might say, look, I just don't want to be invested in carbon because, I have a problem with making money from that while it's, you know, and I want to try and encourage more companies to do it, then sure, you can knock that sector out. If you're looking at something like, a positive effect and like a solar panel manufacturer, and you're saying, well, I'd like to increase solar panel, you know, around the world or whatever, is saying, well, there's either donations you can make to foundations that are, you know, putting them on schools or whatever, or you actually just go and buy solar panels yourself and put them on your house or put them on your investment property or whatever it is, to actually, that will really help more so than actually getting out and doing one of those. So anyway, I'll get off my house on that one, because I do want people to think about it. We offer ethical, but I want to make sure people are actually ticking the box, because actually it's not just virtue signaling, you know, it's not just, there's this thing about, you know, if I see an Instagram post and complaining about something, and I can go in there and complain about the latest thing Donald Trump's just said or whatever it is, or the latest cause, you know, me clicking the like button really isn't doing much. But I don't want to walk away feeling as if I have done a lot. And, you know, I want people to actually genuinely help whatever the cause they're looking to help is.
Yeah. And Damo, back to that question, why do you actually want to ethically invest? I think it boils down to values. You know, some people They just want to make money. Other people, they want to feel good about how their money's invested, or they want to do some good in the world. And often those two things, they're sort of at odds. You know, if you ethically invest, well, maybe you're not going to make as much money. There might be slight underperformance compared to, you know, if you're just purely got a profit mentality.
Yeah. Well, then we'll move on to that in a sec, the actual performance hit, because I think a lot of people are sort of pleasantly surprised about the longer term impacts of it, because it's probably not as much as what they think in terms of the investment impact. But the first thing I wanted to bring up, though, is that ethical rating is not a science. As much as we'd love it to be this thing about saying, oh, this company's really rates really well, this one doesn't rate really well, I've got a scatter plot up here from MSCI, which is one provider of ESG scores, and another one from FTSE, which is another provider of ESG scores. And it's basically plotted them all on a chart. Each dot is a company, and it's rating on one and it's rating on the other. Now, for anyone who's just listening in, it's basically a random scatter. There are companies all over the place. There's some of them that rate really highly on one, but not on the other. And there's some that rate highly on both, and some that rate badly on both. But it's just all over the place. Like, it doesn't look like a science at all. You'd expect that if there was a solid methodology and everyone sort of following the same thing, you'd end up with something close to a straight line, where, you know, a diagonally, you know, a 45 degree angle. But you just don't. It's just not similar. And one of the examples, this is from a few years ago, but one of the examples, there's a third provider, which I think was Russell. And they used Tesla as one of the examples, where one of them smashed Tesla because it had such poor corporate governance. And so it was one of the worst ones out there. The other one loved it because it was, you know, it was all about electric vehicles and getting off carbon, and so rated really highly. And the third one had it somewhere in the middle. And so you've got, yeah, single stock, which depending upon which provider you want to do to take, is either the best, the worst, or somewhere in the middle. And so there is this part about, once you start, especially the social scores, we find that there's and that's part of the reason why it's cracking down on this greenwashing. What we find within ours is we try and be quite specific about the companies we're trying to knock out. Because then people can go, well, okay, I'm going to invest with you. I'm not going to get any stocks that are in the alcohol and tobacco sector. Great. I know what I'm not getting. You know, there's not a second order, for example. So we're getting rid of the tobacco stocks, but there isn't like a second order. Oh, okay. We're also going to kick out Woolworths because it sells tobacco. We're saying, no, we're just limiting this one to one step. Whereas, the social part, it's actually really difficult. So how do you judge whether a company is paying its employees the right, you know, how do you judge whether it's interacting appropriately with local communities? You know, you might have a mining company that donates all this money to the local football teams, but pollutes the local stream. You know, which is more important, the pollution of the stream or the donation to the local football teams? There's so many of these things that are so many gray areas in terms of the social side. The final side, the governance side, is actually a little bit easier usually. And we find within the governance, to us, that's actually a value. That's actually a quality measure anyway. Like, we're already using governance in our, even if we weren't looking at companies in terms of the, from an ESG perspective, we're just saying, well, if a company's got good governance, chances are it's going to perform better over a period of time. And so, so that one's a bit easier. There was one other thing I was going to say on the social one. Oh, so social one, some of them you can be specific about. We throw that as into ours. So you can sort of, for example, we've got some stuff in, some screens we'll use where we'll say diversity. You know, you've got to have a certain proportion of your board needs to be female. We use sort of 10% cutoff and 25% cutoff. And you'd be surprised at how many companies fail the 10% cutoff, particularly in Japan, for, you know, not having one person in 10 in their senior management or board. So there's things like that you can do, and just, you know, for us that's a choice. Do you think diversity is important? If so, choose to knock those out. But a lot of the social ones are very difficult to actually quantify and to come up with an assessment of what the right thing is.
Yeah, it seems like a real art, not a science. And there's just so many aspects to this sort of ESG or ethical investing. And I guess that's why, back to my point before, why they've tried to sort of standardize it to a degree with the ESG.
Yeah, and as you can see from that scatter plot, it's not.
Yeah, hasn't worked. And then with your Tesla example as well, it really is very subjective.
Yeah, and even on the governance side, you look at something like a Google, and they've got this board that's extremely diverse. You know, really well thought of in terms of, you know, quite senior and all that, and they're largely independent, so that's great. On the flip side, they've got these voting shares so that, you know, the founders can get a better, more say over the company than what they should have. So which is more important, the board or the shareholder structure? And so, yeah, those questions pop up all over the place. Anyway, but let's talk about performance, because that's probably that's probably what people really do want to know. So first part is that a lot of this really depends upon how much skill you think investment managers have. Because what you're doing is, in my mind, ethical is reducing your opportunity set. So if I've got 1,600 stocks globally that I can invest in the large cap index, and then you say to me, no, you're not allowed to invest in those 1,600. You're only allowed to invest in 800 of those. Now I'd like you to go and beat everyone else who can access all 1,600. You've reduced my opportunity set. And so the chances are, you know, we're looking at a lower performance. On the flip side, if you don't think managers have any skill at all, then it doesn't really matter, because you're just taking a random bet on different sectors. So yeah, I guess that sort of depends very much on on your thoughts on skill versus luck within this. The main thing I do want to say on portfolio performance, don't get too caught up on specific historical examples. Like every few years you have these headlines come out, which is basically, hey, you can have it all, Sam. You know, ethical funds have outperformed, and, you know, they've done really well over the last year. So you can invest ethically and you can get great performance. And then there's other times where you don't see the headlines, but the reverse happens. So what that tends to rely on really is the oil and gas sector. The oil and gas sector booms, then ethical funds outperform. If it busts, ethical performance, other way around. Yeah. Ethical, the oil and gas sector booms, ethical funds don't have it, so they'll underperform. If it busts, ethical funds don't have it, so they outperform.
Is that the major determining factor, do you think?
That's the major one, but there are other ones. Like I've got one up just sort of showing this tobacco. So you went through about an almost 10-year period where the ex-tobacco funds all underperformed. So any of the funds, and that's quite a common ethical screen in Australia. So there's a lot of funds that were like, yeah, we're a normal fund, but we don't invest in any tobacco stocks. And so they spent 10 years underperforming, and then they spent another 5 years outperforming. And was that because there was a brilliant decision on one part or the other? No, it was just what was the tobacco sector doing over that time period? And it wasn't, not as much about the ethical side as what it was about your other factors that are in there. The other thing is fees. Yeah, so if you're finding somebody who's not that ethical on your fees, you know, you might be giving up return, but it's not really investment return. You might be getting a very similar investment return to the rest of the market. It's just that your investment manager might be telling you that they need to charge a lot more, and it does. And I've seen it happen. You know, people that might run a fund and charge 0.5% for it, and they're out charging 1 or 1.5% for an ethical fund. Is it any harder? No. I mean, in the most part, what most fund managers end up doing is they buy in somebody else to do the ethical screens for them. And they basically say, well, we'll, you know, MSCI or Russell or someone like that, you do the ethical screens, and then just tell us what we're allowed to buy. So rather than having 16 stocks of it, you know, now I've only got 1,200 stocks I can buy. I don't care why MSCI's cut them out. It's just going out and trying to find the best of those 1,200 stocks. And so that's the way most fund managers treat it. So there's no real reason that they should be charging you more for ethical, but except the fact that they can,
just because they can, and it's not that ethical. They're just riding that wave of ethical, that greenwashing.
So the other thing for performance, though, there's probably a better indicator. Now this is a few years old, but it hasn't changed that much. I just wanted to show, this is a GMO thing, looking at the US and just saying, well, what happens if you excluded an entire sector? So if you looked at 70-odd years of from 1957 to 2017, you're basically saying, you know, if you had to exclude the entire consumer staple sector, you would have underperformed by about 0.6%. And there's plenty of sectors you would have outperformed with. So, yeah, that's your worst outcome over that time period. And if you go back even further, it gets even smaller. So, you know, now you're back to sort of 0.15%. Your underperformance. So I guess where I'm getting to is there's not a lot of, over the longer term, if you're just going to be excluding one sector consistently, there's probably not a lot of difference that's going to make to your overall investment portfolio.
Yeah, but we got to take into account ethical fees. If there's a
exactly
charging you high fees,
existing fees. Yep.
Yeah.
Then there's very little. It might be 0.1%, 0.2%. You'd expect it. Like I'm showing you the worst examples here. So you'd expect that 0.1%, 0.2%. Or less, and it's either direction as well. Like you can be above as well as below, and so I guess from that perspective, there is an element of reducing the sample size, but I think if you're knocking stuff out, I think that quite a low return is over the longer term is what history would tell us is going to happen to the portfolio.
Yeah, see, that's interesting, because I was under the impression that investing ethically, you were likely to get underperformance just because of that smaller sample size. But I guess the evidence shows, it's a pretty minimal
over the long term. Is the point?
Yeah,
it might be a percent or two in a year, but I mean, the worst thing you can do is go, well, chopping energy, and so you're like, You don't have any energy in your portfolio. The energy sector booms, and you're like, oh, I missed out. Oh, let me jump into a normal one. Then the energy sector busts, and then you're like down, and ethical funds outperformed, and you're reading the headline saying, hey, ethical funds outperformed. You're like, oh, let me get back into that just before energy booms again. So, here's what I'm saying is if you pick a lane and stick with it, you'll probably find that the performance over the long term is not that different.
Yeah, and the same goes for chopping and changing between investment managers. There's a lot of research out there that retail investors that jump around, they significantly underperform compared to just staying with a fund.
Yeah, particularly if you're going between different styles. So you're going from a quality manager to a value manager to a growth manager or whatever it is. And so you pick whatever performed great over the last 2 years, that's what you're jumping into. And then investment styles, we go through a growth section, then we go through a value section, then we go through a quality section. So yeah, absolutely. But let's talk about some of the investment options you've got out there. So there's a BetaShares ETF. So if you want to go through that down a listed fund, I've just brought up the types of things you can expect to cut out. So no gambling, no alcohol, no animal cruelty. So I think at the top of the list, sort of most people would sort of be cutting those out. Nuclear energy is a fascinating one for us. Is that we find some people are like, no, I don't want nuclear energy in it. Other people are like, I do want, I don't want any carbon, but I do want nuclear energy, because I think nuclear energy is an alternative that should be used. And so, just a clear example of if you're buying an ETF, chances are you might be throwing out a lot of things that you might be ambivalent about. Then you get managed funds, I've got a little bit of a quote here, but I just want to highlight that there's this is looking at US, and 8 of the 10 biggest sustainable funds were invested in oil and gas companies. You had a Vanguard. When Vanguard's a very good company, and usually quite ethical as well, their own fees and everything, but they had a social index fund meant to track index excluding companies with significant controversies. And that fund had Occidental Petroleum Group, which sort of paid a bunch of Peruvian villagers this massive amount for contaminating the Amazon. Like this, I'm sure you can find something within any of these where things have gone wrong. So I guess the question for all those is trying to work out, what am I getting? Am I getting it? And then are they actually genuinely trying to do the right thing?
And so that's sort of, so you've got your ETFs, you've got a number of different managed funds out there trying to match that up with what you like. The other thing that you can do then is sort of the customized options. So you can go get sort of individual share portfolios through an ethical advisor, or you can go down the sort of separately managed accounts. And that's the space we play, where we run quite large portfolios, and then we let people knock out the sectors or stocks that they're not interested in. That's sort of basically your three options. One is listed ETFs. Secondly is going to a managed fund that will give you access to it. And then finally, the custom versions, ranging between having your own portfolio to a separately managed account where it's sort of professionally run portfolio, but lets you make some changes to that portfolio.
Yeah, and Damo, I think a really important point we're trying to make for the viewers is that not all ethical investment managers are created equal, and you really do need to look under the hood, and you need to do a deep dive and see if they're a type that just excludes pretty much everything. Do you want to align yourself with that? If there are certain sectors like the nuclear one, for example, that comes up for us all the time. If people do perceive that to be a good, clean type of energy in the way of the future, I mean, more than likely you'd want to invest in that and not exclude it. And I think from that sort of point, that's where, from what you've told me, why Nucleus Wealth chose to do the actual exclusions to allow people to actually decide what they value and what they want and what they don't want, and then create your portfolio from there. And then, it really is aligned to your values and beliefs. It's important. It's important to do a deep dive and to really look under the hood and see what's actually in each of these ethical funds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two quick things I want to do. One is just a quick shout out. We have an ethical comparison tool up there, so you can just go through and have a look and choose the types of things you might subtract from a portfolio and just see how that rates versus others. So for ours, for example, religion relates right at the bottom in terms of popularity, and climate change rates quite right at the top, and actually varies though. Once you dig in there, say war, for example, war is not very popular with there's a lot of older investors who have been removing companies to do with war, whereas a lot of the younger investors are actually, they seem to be happier to have the companies that are actually producing the weapons, but they're more concerned about, say, human rights or climate change from portfolios. And we'll link that in the show notes. So with that, I just want to sort of give those the final words. So I'll come back to that. Why are you doing this? If you want to make the world a better place using your money, consider other ways first. Is a donation going to be more helpful? And keep your investment separate to your ability to do good with your money. And then the question though is, if you want to use your money and you want to say, well, I don't want to make the world a worse place, that's where we think we like to step in and let you say, well, you might be uncomfortable making money from tobacco, regardless of whether it's really profitable or whatever. You just want to say, I don't want to make any money from tobacco. And then there's probably not as much difference in returns as what you might think over the longer term, but you do need to sort of dig in and make sure you're not paying unethical fees. And I think that thought that there's jobs you just wouldn't do because regardless of how much money you get paid, and that should be probably similar for a lot of people with your investments. If you would work in that industry because you feel bad about the way they make money, then maybe question about whether you should be investing in that industry along the same path.
Excellent, nice one, Damo. I just want to show this slide here. I may not have popped that up, but you can see all the different ethical investment options we've got. So you can see the sectors there, and then so you click on each one, climate change, for example. So you can choose to exclude no fossil fuels, the worst offenders, or anything to do with fossil fuels. So there's that next level of customization within each, I guess, sector or ethical category that we have there. So if you want to have a look in a bit more detail, go to nucleuswealth.com/ethical.
And if there's things you want to cut out that we haven't approached and you think there's a way of us finding those companies, but particularly from an independent source, you know, we're always interested in talking to and adding new features.
Yeah, and just on that point, an advisor reached out to us recently about Sharia investing. And so we've now offered that option as well, haven't we?
Yes.
Yep. So yeah, we're always open to doing things differently and open to ideas. So if you've got any feedback for us or something you would like to see in there, just reach out to us at contact@nucleuswealth.com and start the conversation. We're more than happy to entertain those ideas. So now moving on, we have our question of the week. So this is for viewers to have some discussion in the comments section over the coming days. The question for this week is, which method of ethical investment would you choose? So feel free to post your thoughts and engage with us and some of the other viewers over the coming days. So that almost wraps us up. Damo, this week we're not going to do an investment insights, are we?
No.
Pre-record.
Pre-record, that's right.
Do you know what? A couple of weeks out. Anything can happen at this stage with the markets being as volatile as they are.
But you know, I will be around and I'll be writing, I'll be blog posting and stuff like that. So yeah, come to the site and if you're looking for any big movements, I'll be talking about it there.
Excellent. Well, that almost wraps us up. So Damo, thanks again for sharing all your valuable insights. And I'm sure
Sam's
got lots out of it. Awesome. So we do welcome your feedback on this podcast, especially in regards to suggestions for future topics. If you do have any ideas, please drop it in the comments section below or send us an email at contact@nucleuswealth.com. Just a reminder, this is general advice and does not take into account your personal situation. If you do want to discuss your personal financial situation, please go to our website at nucleuswealth.com/contact and you can book a call with myself and we can have a chat. Don't forget to like the video now, and if you know of anyone that might get some value out of today's episode, we'd really appreciate it if you could please share it with them. Also, if you'd like to see more of our previous episodes and content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content or subscribe to our homepage for our weekly Nucleus news and investment insights. We do put out a lot of other articles and videos in addition to this podcast, so that's where you can check it out there. And of course, you can also follow us on all major social media. So for myself, Damien, and the rest of the team at Nucleus Wealth, thanks for watching and we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.